Relay. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of television. This is episode 112, recorded on January 30th, 2025, and released a little bit later. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell. I am joined once again by the injury expert of Under the Knife himself, Will Carroll. Will, welcome back to Downstream.
Well, thanks for having me. It's been great. I know you're, well, we're recording this, but when people are listening to this, you'll be elsewhere.
I'm going to be on vacation, and it's going to be Super Bowl week.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not like everybody doesn't watch the Super Bowl everywhere. I'm sure that'll be interesting wherever you are.
Oh, I'll be home. I mean, the funny thing is I land back home the day before the Super Bowl, so.
Oh, well, there you go.
I'll be doing my vacation recovery while staring at the Seahawks and the Patriots. A replay. I hope Marshawn Lynch, who is a local here and the game is being held here, I hope Marshawn Lynch goes. I think that would be fun, right?
There's no way Bad Bunny doesn't bring him out to drive around, man, in his little car.
Oh, yeah, he goes to ride the golf cart. Do you know I was there for that?
No.
I have photos.
What was the reaction at the time?
We were all laughing because the story here is Marshawn Lynch played for Cal and they beat Washington. There's a real great digression in our Not a Sports Podcast, but they beat Washington and Washington always beat Cal, and they beat Washington. It was a very exciting game. And at the end of the game, everybody's cheering and everybody's going wild because Cal has actually won this game. And they had these little golf carts that they used to move equipment around, and then I think maybe it wasn't even the ones for injury. I think it was just to move equipment around.
Water.
And
it's always water.
Marshawn just ran over to one and was tooling around on the field in a celebratory fashion, just making cuts and moving all around the field. And you can see the video. But yeah, I've got some pictures of it. I was there with my camera up in the 20th row at 35-yard line watching Marshawn do that. He was such a fun player as a college player, and then I was afraid the NFL was going to crush his spirit, but then the Bills traded him to Seattle, and he found his home. So I'll be back for that. I'm avoiding Super Bowl week in the Bay Area. Other than that, I'll be in a warmer, nicer place than that. Sorry, but we should talk about the Super Bowl and the Winter Olympics because those are both happening. It's the NBC. Many they're spending a lot of money, and they're going to show a lot of sports for the next couple of weeks. Winter Olympics starts before the Super Bowl, actually. Yeah. I was looking at the curling schedule because I am that guy. And it starts like day minus two, and to get the two events in, because there's a mixed doubles event followed by the men and women's fours, which runs simultaneously. It actually runs, I think it's curling is the only sport that is on every single day of the games, and it's actually 2 days before the games they start because they got to get them all in. And you'll see them all on CNBC, apparently, which is nothing but curling. Is what it stands for, curling, nothing but curling. And USA Network, because in an interesting twist, Versant, the non-owned by NBC, spun out company, they're still going to put a bunch of Olympic sports on there so that people can see it on linear, which is fine. And then it'll be on Peacock along with the Super Bowl on Super Bowl Sunday. And so they've got this whole thing. They're saying 4K all day because they're going to do a bunch of 4K content for the Olympics and the Super Bowl and the Super Bowl pregame show. And it's going to be a whole NBC Peacock extravaganza.
Yeah, I'm very curious about this because to me, this feels like Peacock's last stand. Mm. You know, we've talked before about, you know, how Versant has now spun out, and, you know, at least on a stock price, it's not done terribly well.
Yeah.
You could honestly say bad, though I think that's more a valuation thing rather than an execution thing. Because there's such a long lead time.
Yeah.
The thing I think here is if they don't hit with the sports they have, okay, they've got all of February is Super Bowl, huge. How many will actually go over to Peacock? What can they do? I know they're doing some sort of multi-view. I'm going to assume there's some sort of alt cast, some sort of stats cast, some sort of...
You would hope.
Yeah, maybe... I know they're saying there's going to be multiple live camera views, which is kind of the be a director at home.
Yeah.
Except we all shouldn't be directors at home. If you've ever gotten to go in a truck, one of the like live trucks, it is insane. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it possibly does that. But, you know, if they're doing these live multicam views, if they're figuring out things they can do for the NBA, if they're figuring out, this actually just broke today when we're recording this, that NBC, who now has Sunday Night Baseball, is bringing on Clayton Kershaw, Joey Votto, somebody, Anthony Rizzo from Flash Yankees. That's a good bunch. You know, I'm curious to see. Kershaw has never shown a lot of personality, but is a smart guy. We know Matthew Stafford is making a decision on whether he's going to go into the booth as well. And they grew up together, of course. But if Peacock doesn't execute on all this, and if they can't convince some people to buy Peacock and then watch on Peacock, what's the point of all this?
It is. I mean, I don't know if it's make or break or not, but it is definitely the strategy with Peacock is all of these sports. NBC has invested so much in sports rights, and they are getting, like, there are some NFL games that are just on Peacock. The Olympics is actually the best thing to have a streaming service for, because NBC has done, for I would say the last two Olympics, has done a very good job. In the last Summer Olympics, it did an excellent job in how it handled using Peacock for the Olympics. So that's good. If people get Peacock for that, I think they'll be pretty happy with it. I think the question is, like, in the long run, do they have enough to carry them? I think they've got... some of the NBA stuff. They've got an NBA game on NBC, but they've also got other parts of it that are on Peacock. I think with Major League Baseball, they've got a Peacock component as well as a Sunday Night Baseball component. Mm-hmm. So if you're NBC, you know, you pay so much money for the Super Bowl, you pay so much money for the Olympics, especially to get people in the door and realize that this is a thing I want to keep around. And make or break, I don't know, but, like, it's very important for them to make a good impression with Peacock. Right.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, this is, like, the one thing that can force people. I don't think people say, oh, crap, I've got to watch Poker Face, which is a fine show.
And already canceled, basically.
Going to bring you in? No, not like these are.
I would say also ESPN, which has the advantage of having many linear networks that NBC doesn't have anymore because they have spun off CNBC and USA Network and all of that. Although they've got the NBC Sports Network that was revived so that they could put some of the Peacock sports on linear for people like my mom, who is not going to stream but has a cable box. Okay, fair. That's fair. But I look at, when you talk about NBC sports strategy, one of the things I think is you don't have to have a bunch of linear channels anymore to have interesting alternative strategies. And, you know, we've talked about it. I love the Manning cast. It has its flaws, but I really love it as an alternative. And I like the idea that you're watching. We were watching the playoff game that they did, and it was the Mannings. And it was another NFL quarterback. And it was so good. And I kept thinking, nothing succeeds like success. This is a cheap show to produce, and it is, and it does okay in the ratings. It doesn't have to be a huge hit. And that's where I thought, I was like, well, Sunday Night Football and basketball and baseball, but certainly Sunday Night Football ought to have an alt cast. Just, like, rip it off. You don't get the Manning brothers, right? And so you got to find another thing. But I feel like that's the next stage for them, is that they need to do some innovation, and that innovation can happen on Peacock so that people who are not watching on NBC or who have NBC are like, oh, maybe I should switch to Peacock because I'll get something else. And they need to do more of that.
You know, I'm curious to see whether or not there's anything they show here with the Olympics that can be carried forward. Is it this multi-cam live multi-view or whatever they're calling it? Can that be carried forward? Is it worth it? How much effort does it take? You know, for the Super Bowl, there's 100 something cameras and a billion people watching, and the ads certainly carry it. You know, for something else, I'm not sure it will. Speaking of, I don't know if you watched any of the Australian Open.
I missed it, which is too bad because I usually really like it. It's one of my favorites because a lot of the matches are on in late prime time on the West Coast, which I really like. But I missed it this time.
There's actually a new camera, and it took people a while to figure out. And it basically looks like it's on the baseline, and the cameraman is just running along with who's ever playing. The one I saw was Jannik Sinner, and I was like, the first look, you're like, how is this thing doing? How fast is this cameraman? And, and wouldn't he be annoying to the player? Turns out it's basically like a strip cam, and it's a bunch of like iPhone cameras that can, the software can actually pan back and forth. It was freaking brilliant. And so, you know, that's going to be at every tennis tournament. The company is evidently talking to the NFL that they could just put a million cameras around the field and do the crazy things that Intel talked about a couple of years ago before they fell off the face of the earth. But back to Peacock, innovations like this that you do for the Olympics because you have so many eyeballs, I'm curious, do they do that for basketball, which they have? Do they do that for the Premier League, which they have? Do they do that for baseball, which they have? So they've collected a good bunch of rights. But again, there's so much churn these days that can you keep people around when it's not Super Bowl / Olympics month?
Right. Or whatever your sport of choice is. Right. Like, yeah.
It's not basketball season. Do I need it?
It's very funny because you think about this expensive scripted programming, and they kept Bravo. So they've got all the Bravo stuff, which does stream well. Mm-hmm. They get the traders and all of that is in there. And they've got some network content. Scripted is very expensive. But it is funny to think about it and think, well, in some ways, the scripted is really there to, and the reality is there to keep you around between sporting events or sporting seasons. Like it's you're throwing a bunch of stuff in, you're bundling content, right? In order to get it to be worth keeping. And if there's a show you like, if you're watching the Traders, then you're not going to cancel because you're watching the Traders. Yeah. And then it's baseball season. And you're like, oh, Sunday Night Baseball on Peacock. That's or on NBC, and I'll watch it on Peacock. If you're a cord cutter, they've done a pretty good job with that. Although, you know, I've still got my complaint that there are soccer games that are on USA Network that are not on Peacock, which is, I hate it so much. But maybe they'll work all that stuff out. I don't know. I think it's good now before we enter the Super Bowl weekend and that big weekend with them and Mike Tirico flying to Italy right after the game and all of those things to set the stage here, because this is a very important, if not make or break moment for NBC's streaming strategy for Peacock. This is what they want to make it kind of transcend and be this other piece for them. Their sports rights are good, but like, how do they differentiate? And again, I think the Olympics is a great example where Olympics is not going to help you with churn because it's 2 years to the next Olympics. But if people come for the Olympics and are impressed by what they're doing, maybe they'll stay for the other stuff. And I will say years ago, I'll just reiterate, they killed it on Peacock with the Olympics at the Summer Olympics. So I imagine they will do the same with the Winter Olympics, and that helps. And if the Super Bowl shoulder programming is good, and if the NBA stuff is good, like that's how you build that audience that wants, and for me, it's Premier League, right? Like I love being able to tune in, you know, any Premier League game. So like they just have to do that.
Yeah. And the great thing is, you know, it's not like they can't continue to show the NBA games, if that's what you're into, while doing the Olympics. Plus, we're going to see infinite ads for whatever programming is upcoming on Peacock. I'm curious, because the deal is so far out, if the Taylor Sheridan stuff, he's moving to Peacock in like, 2035.
It's a few years away. Yeah, I don't think they can say anything about it because there is nothing, right? He's still under contract elsewhere until.
Yeah, does he hint? I mean, you know,
I don't know.
He's got 20 different shows running now. I know that he's plotting around Friday Night Lights, and they have the rights to that. Mm. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah.
What happens at the end? Yeah, it's kind of like, yeah, the Duffer Brothers are going, I think, to Paramount, but they're still doing stuff with Netflix. All that production stuff is
And Ryan Murphy and Shonda Rhimes, like you end up with the show that you're maintaining. Although it does sound actually like, from Paramount's perspective, now that Taylor Sheridan is out the door, they're less inclined to keep making those shows, even though they're hits, which I find very strangely self-destructive. But maybe they've just decided they're only going to give this guy so much money, and then they want to, you know, move on. And they don't need to maintain that relationship anymore. It's a very weird thing. So something you brought up that I was watching somebody talk about, I think it was a news event. I don't think it was even sports, and somebody, or maybe it was even an ad. And it was like, it was a predictions market ad. And I got to the end and I thought, you're just betting. It's just gambling. It's just betting on events instead of it's like the two guys in what is it, Trading Places, the two rich guys who make the bet about Eddie Murphy and Dan Aykroyd. Like, it's just betting on events, right? And you wanted to talk about predictions markets in, you know, because Super Bowl obviously is a big betting event. What, and you know way more about gambling than I do, but like prediction markets versus Super Bowl betting, and are we going to see more kind of innovation in the Super Bowl? NBC doesn't have a partnership with a betting provider, do they, or do they?
I think they do.
No, maybe they do.
No, I can't remember which one.
So what do you want to talk about betting in the Super Bowl?
If you're not familiar with the big prediction markets, the two names you're going to hear are Kalshi and Polymarket. They're different than sports books, but now DraftKings has a prediction market, and the company that owns the New York Stock Exchange is going to have a prediction market. And I'm sure Trump will brand one and put it next to his nuclear fusion company. So it's one of those interesting things in that there's tons of FanDuel, MGM, DraftKings that we're going to see. We're going to see the odds. We're going to see crazy Super Bowl prop bets. Mattress Mack will probably make some $1 million bet. But it's those props that are where the money is really made. If you want to do, you know, how long, my favorite prop bet of all time is how long is this, the national anthem going to take? It's a 1 minute song. Yeah. It never takes 1 minute. How many runs is, I don't even know who's doing it this year.
The challenge with the prop bets is this is where all the fraud is too. This is where all the point shaving and missing on ball one and all of that.
Yeah. There's so many of those, but with prediction markets, there is functionally no rules. You know, with betting, A, there's taxes, and B, there's rules. You know, you can bet on this and this and this, and you can't bet on this and this and this, and there's controls and know your customer stuff, and believe me, they do. There's so many things that the house has to do. The house has an edge. There's a reason there's a bunch of big fancy casinos in Las Vegas. But with prediction markets, they're saying there's not. But there is. And we're seeing a lot of cheating. We're seeing a lot of insider trading just because they don't have the same kind of house controls on this, nor taxes. And in the states like Texas and California that don't have legal sports betting, the prediction markets operate there anyway. It's really a wild west. So I'm worried, much like we saw with the prop bets and the pitching that you mentioned, two Cleveland Indians pitchers were throwing, literally throwing pitches, not throwing games, just pitches. And there were a couple $1 million moving a week. So I'm worried that at the same time we're seeing Polymarket, Kalshi and the competitors really kind of explode into consciousness, public consciousness. This is the exact time that something bad happens if they don't have the right regulation and controls. And things are just, it's just like with AI. Things are moving way too fast for the regulations to keep up. So we're going to see Super Bowl ads for this. We're going to see Super Bowl mentions. Polymarket actually has a, I think it was during the Golden Globes that they were showing the contract prices.
Right. And that's probably one of the ads that I saw was somewhere was a very similar, like a Polymarket ad where it's like, look, I'm betting on things that'll happen in the future, but it's not betting. It's I'm investing in a fund that will pay out on, which is just like, you know, you're slicing it pretty thin there.
It's back. You know, when I worked at FanDuel, it was pre pass bud decision and we couldn't say the word gambling. It was the G word. You just can't say it. We all knew what it was.
Yeah, daily
but
fantasy.
You couldn't say it out loud. Daily fantasy, which still exists. But yeah, I think this is a dangerous period. And the Super Bowl, I think, is such a big event that people are going to get away with something. When there's a, I think it was $1.7 billion of bets, A, how much of a chunk are they going to take away? Or are they additive, which is even more dangerous? And if there's that much money, you can get away with a small but sizable, you know, fraudulent cheating, insider trading, Next time we'll have to go through and see if anything had actually happened or what the weird prop bets on the side were.
Yeah, I'm reminded the big one that that people were talking about is that somebody bet big in the prediction market about whether Maduro would be taken would still be in Venezuela or whatever the night mm-hmm. before the U.S. invasion that took him out, and
it was a new anonymous account from I forget where. It was very clear.
Yeah,
they had VPN.
It's insider trading of reality is what's happening there, which is okay. We'll keep an eye on it. I wanted to segue to talking about some other kinds of sports like UFC and WWE. This is something you wanted to talk about. Mm-hmm. I think it's not an area I pay a lot of attention to, but there's a lot of audience happening here, and it's so Paramount has taken over UFC, and they got great ratings for their first event. ESPN is going to Saudi Arabia for the Royal Rumble. That's WWE. I've seen a Royal Rumble. That's like the only wrestling thing I've ever seen because my friend Phil Michaels invited me over to his house because he and his wife have like fun drafting wrestlers and seeing what happened. And I watched it all with sort of like bafflement. But so these rights are expensive. Who's made the right call?
That's the interesting one, because first, both WWE and the UFC are owned by a company called TKO, which was sort of a roll up of a bunch of sports assets from Dick Clark and Endeavor, and the Saudis have a ton of money in it, which is why it's over in Saudi Arabia, where they're literally still building the arena for the thing. It's really intriguing for a number of reasons. First, I've been told by more than one person that Paramount wanted it because WWE UFC is much more politically focused. I mean, if you think about it, it's a very male sport. Joe Rogan is the announcer. Dana White is apparently one of Trump's best friends. Trump keeps showing up to these, and Paramount aligns better with that. Disney, you know, even though they have a news operation, they tend to stay kind of out of things if they can. And I am told by more than one person that they didn't want to deal with Dana White anymore. So can you take the WWE, which is more rationally managed, and let the UFC go and keep the numbers? And it looks like early on, that's exactly what happened.
Hmm.
That Paramount took it, hyped it up, got good numbers for a reasonably decent ticket. I think the tough part for both sides now is that there is not a big name on either side. If you went to an MMA fan, they don't really care. Is it a good fight? But outside, there's no John Jones. There's no big star
in
the UFC right now, the way that Conor McGregor kind of leaped past the sport into, you know, national consciousness.
Yeah, and you can list the number of fighters and wrestlers who have done that same thing all the way back to when we were kids and even before we were born, where you always have Sugar Ray Leonard or Muhammad mm-hmm. Ali or whatever. They're like that great fighters, but stars. Right. It's like star power makes a difference, because then you're not asking when's the next fight. You're asking when's the next Mike Tyson fight.
Exactly. And there's so very few of those. I mean, in this day and age, it's Jake Paul, with everybody watching him against Anthony Joshua.
How we have fallen.
But, you know, in boxing, there's not one of those. There were some good heavyweight fights recently. There's some great fighters. I mean, we did have the Crawford Canelo. The Saudi money has made some fights that for decades weren't getting made because of promotions and promoters and everything else. The Alphabet organizations, which is what WWE and UFC don't have. They don't have competition. There's other things out there, but there's nothing even close.
Right.
But if you don't have stars, I mean, there is no next Rock. There is no next John Cena. There is no next Conor McGregor. There's no next Ronda Rousey. as hard as they try to pick some of these people up. So I'm curious to see if they can retain the ratings, if they can make some stars, if they can, you know, offsite some of the, trying to think of an example here. You know, they haven't been able to launch Cody Rhodes into being John Cena. He's done some reality shows. The Bella Twins have done some reality shows, but they haven't really elevated anyone on either side. So I'm very curious to see how this plays out in the long market. The other one, especially for Paramount, is that evidently we're going to get a White House UFC fight. I don't know how that's going to come off. we're getting an IndyCar race down the streets of Washington, and here, living here in Indy, people yesterday did not know about it. They got a call this morning, and now they've got to change logistics and everything else to figure this out. They've got a TV contract, so Fox is going to show it, but evidently these are going to be connected somehow. I don't get that, why we're having a, you know, 4th of July race in August. But for Paramount, that could end up another huge event. Though the problem is, most of the champions right now are from, I think it's Dagestan, one of the stands. And a lot of Russians have been champions. There's no, or very few, top-tier American fighters. And I think that would be a little
bad optics, tougher sell, right?
for a White House fight.
Unless you're going to go full-on WWE and have it be, you know, or, you know, classic wrestling and have the villains that are booed and all of that. But I'm not sure the fighters are going to love that. Yeah, I mean, this is a way, just, I mean, these are sports of a kind to a certain degree or other, but it's the same idea. How do you, you know, I mean, the even in NFL, NBA and all of that, stars do matter, and they can't be bought. They can't be manufactured. They kind of have to happen. Mm-hmm. You have to have the right moment, and you have to have the right infrastructure, but in the end, you can't make it happen. They just sort of capture people's attention. And that's tricky when you're buying rights, right? Because you don't have somebody to bank on there.
Exactly. No, but the last fight was, I think, Volkanovski and Gaethje. So it's one of those where, you know, those aren't household names, but is the next one going to come during, you know, whatever 3-5 year period there is for the current rights package, and can you hold on to that? Yeah, we've seen, you know, baseball. What's their next rights package going to be?
No,
it's not
going to
be what
that.
The NBA got.
This episode of Downstream is brought to you by Ecamm. If you're a Mac user who creates video or podcasts, you need Ecamm. Ecamm Live is the all-in-one studio built exclusively for the Mac, so it looks, feels, and performs just like a native pro app should. This is why I use Ecamm. It is a real Mac app. Whether you're live streaming, recording a podcast, or even producing training videos, Ecamm gives you broadcast level control with drag and drop simplicity. Switch cameras, share your screen, cue overlays, control audio, never leave your Mac. I use it to produce Total Party Kill live streams, Six Colors live streams. It is so great to be able to get the exact design I want, get all the little pictures and all the little boxes, completely control audio. It is, that's why I subscribe. That's why I pay for Ecamm Live. Is I love how Mac friendly it is. It feels like a real Mac app, and it gives me the creative control to make exactly the output that I want. You can brand your show with titles, graphics, and lower thirds. You can pull in guests via their interview mode. You can record multi-track audio for perfect post-production. And one of the things I really love, if you're into automation, Ecamm works beautifully with tools and apps like Stream Deck and Loopback, as well as many Mac tools you already know and love. I use it with Loopback and Audio Hijack to control the audio on my live stream for video and audio and my recordings and my output. And the Stream Deck integration is so good because you don't have to fake it like I do with most apps. Ecamm Live comes with Stream Deck automation, so I can have my Stream Deck become a control board for my live stream as I'm doing it, which is so great because I'm not clicking around in the interface when I'm streaming live. You can upgrade to Pro as well, at which point you unlock Ecamm for Zoom, which lets you feed your polished setup straight into Zoom meetings or webinars. That's right, you can broadcast into Zoom. You can share Zoom comments on screen. You can capture each participant's audio and video separately for post-production work, which is great if you're editing this afterward. And I got to say, I use it to bring everybody in from a Zoom call. And then every one of those people's cameras is a camera in Ecamm Live for me to control as I want, which makes my job so much easier. Don't wait any longer. Go and check it out now. Get 15% off by going to ecamm.com/downstream and using the code downstream15. That's 15% off at Ecamm, ecamm.com/downstream with the code downstream15. Thank you to Ecamm for supporting Downstream and all of Relay. Yeah, let's segue next to the classic perennial downstream topic now, which is Warner Brothers Discovery. Mm-hmm. As I said to Joe a couple weeks ago, Netflix is in the driver's seat here, and unless Larry Ellison wants to increase his offer substantially, it's theirs to lose at this point. But you wanted to talk about this, the after effect of this. If Netflix offer goes through, what's going to be left is cable channels that are going to get spun off. It's the Discovery Networks cable channels that will get spun off, just like Versant. You know, you were seeing all these companies put their cable companies into a spinoff and put them out on the ice flow. And so the question is, what, I mean, first off, one of the big questions is, what is the value of that? Netflix says that it's pretty decent. David Ellison says it's got no value at all because that valuation benefits, which deal is better. You mentioned that Versant's independence has not been, you know, has not gone great so far in terms of its valuation. So, it is an open question. If Netflix gets the deal done, what is the landscape for cable channels? And does Paramount buy those cable channels that it wanted to buy anyway and just sort of integrate them as part of its overall strategy? Or do they go out on the ice flow, or do they get merged with Versant? Or, like, this is one of the big questions, is there's money being made, right, in cable channels and linear cable channels. It's just not a growth market. So it makes me and when I hear something like that, it makes me think you're going to end up with some investors group, some venture capital or hedge fund kind of types who are like, great, manage the downturn and make a lot of money while they fade away. And I wonder if that might be where this is all going.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I can't figure out how much goes into that. I mean, obviously the TNTs and Food Network and HGTV, all those go into it. There's a whole list of them. But what part of HBO goes into it? Does the channel itself go into it?
I can't imagine.
Or does the IP not? How are we not going to have The Sopranos and The Wire on Netflix? That has to be a big part of the value for either of them.
I would imagine that HBO is not being put on the ice flow, right? Like, HBO is being retained because that has value in a way that the basic cable channels don't.
And we know that the DC studio rights are, but won't Netflix want to kind of take control of that?
I think
pseudo launch of the gun things. But if that goes a little bit sideways, it's been good, but and I like his stuff, but won't the hot Netflix producer want to take over that in the same way that Amazon really, really wanted to take over James Bond?
I feel like that is one of the great questions about the whole Netflix WBD thing, is how separate will those businesses be? I mean, I think whatever David Ellison says, I believe that the goal with Paramount eating Warner Brothers is to just combine them into one mega company, and, you know, there'll be one fewer studio and they'll lay off a whole load of people. I don't think it's going to be quite the same with Netflix. I'm sure there's going to be overlap, but, like, I think Ted Sarandos really thinks that what they're going to come out with is a movie studio that will generate content that will end up on Netflix, but, like, will go in theaters because they do have a theatrical distribution business and there's money to be made there. I think DC Comics is a great example of, like, I think Netflix is going to say, this is great. We're going to set up, you know, we're going to use that business unit that publishes comics, and that'll be good. But, you know, it also is intellectual property creation engine, right? Like not just the existing DC superheroes, but what you see increasingly is a lot of these successful Marvel or DC stories or other kind of franchise stories often emerge from a story that was told in a comic book 10 years ago, because it gives it, it's like a little lab where they can test out a bunch of comic stories. Like the new Supergirl, for example, movie that's coming out is based on a miniseries from, I don't know, 10 years ago. And so it's a great engine to do that. And as long as it breaks even or makes a little bit of profit, I think Netflix will probably be happy to let it continue to just kind of bubble and do its thing over there. And that's what I think is really cool is Netflix has always shown that they're willing to be flexible and change their business. I mean, what did they started mailing out DVDs and now they are a totally different business, I think. And they have an ad business that they refused to have before. And they do live events and sports, which they didn't do before. So I think you could see a very interesting creative company with some new kinds of business that they weren't in before. And I'm actually kind of fascinated to see how the Netflix kind of mindset works when suddenly you have a publishing, a comic book business, and you have a theatrical distribution business. And how does that roll into the whole? Because obviously whatever they're doing, whatever James Gunn is doing with the DC movies, in the end, there will be an understanding that where they're going to go is Netflix at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah. This is, speaking of live events, I actually, from the balcony of a cruise ship, watched via Starlink on a phone, I watched the Alex Honnold thing, climbing
the Taipei Tower.
And I was like, this is kind of technically impressive.
Yeah.
You know, I can remember a time when something like this would have been like the Evel Knievel specials. You know, yeah. Very grainy and poorly done.
Everything old is new again, because it is very much that vibe. But technically, things are so much more advanced now that it's kind of staggering. Yeah. I was watching, I watched a clip of that where Mark Roper is like on the inside, like looking at him as he climbs on the outside. And I was like, this is just bananas, right? Like, what a wild idea. And I mean, Joe and I talked about last time about Star Search and the fact that Netflix now also has embraced this idea of like doing a live variety show where the voting happens in the app while you're watching. Mm-hmm. And that is, I mean, that is, to be fair, kind of every dystopian storyline ever, because the next step is that you do your political debates that way and everybody just votes in the app. And I don't want to live in that world, although we may. But I don't want to live there. So, yeah, it's
aren't we really, really close to the Running Man?
I mean, there. Yeah.
Which just came out on Paramount.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Hey, let's talk about Main Street Sports.
Okay.
For those who don't know, what is Main Street Sports? Well, it's kind of like a shell game, kind of like a little washing machine where they.
It's very much.
Like there was Fox Sports Net, and when Fox got sold to Disney, they were asked to divest because they own ESPN. They divested these regional sports networks, so they sold them to Sinclair, which rebranded them as Diamond. Then they went bankrupt. Then they've been rebranded again, rebranded as Main Street Sports. And as we record this, it's January 30th, and apparently there's a deadline for funding in early February. So by the time you hear this, they may have already gone bankrupt again. They are probably going bankrupt. Whether they go out of business is unclear. There was a lot of talk, and I think maybe that means it was mostly from Main Street, that DAZN was talking about an investment or a partnership. There is now a mystery buyer. I hope it's the mystery team who's involved in all of those sports trade rumors that are out there, talking about an ownership stake. I'm not sure I believe that either, but I mean, if everybody can just Google it and see if this has happened since we recorded this. It's a mess, though, because the problem is these channels air sports and they're doing it right now. They're in the middle of the NHL and NBA season, and these channels have NHL and NBA teams. The Major League Baseball season, you know, pitchers and catchers are reporting shortly. Major League Baseball season isn't that far away. They currently produce Main Street nine teams that have basically informed Main Street that they're terminating their contract. That doesn't mean they can't come back, but they're terminating the contract. And the baseball season is just weeks away. Now, we know that baseball, you and I have talked about it, Rob Manfred wants a clutch of local rights when in 2 years when all of their deals come up. But what's going to happen in the next couple of months is that they may have to do what they already did for seven other teams, which is produce it themselves because there are no longer rights holders. Now, that's worked okay. Like they already know they're apparently already talking to cable partners about this. But the good news, question mark, is that a lot of the big cable companies they've already talked to because, you know, they already had to talk to Cox in Phoenix about it. They already had to talk about, you know, San Diego and like all these other markets where they have had to get it on a cable channel and also do MLB streaming in order to reach everybody. But let's think about this. It's possible that by opening day at the end of March, half of Major League Baseball doesn't have a regional sports network. That's wild, right? That's wild. But that may be where we are because the Main Street Sports RSN business has imploded so badly. Also, I want to throw in Sports Business Journal reported that this Victory Plus company, which streams two NHL teams for free, region locked. And so it's a free streamer, and then they make money on ads and merch sales and all of that. And they also have a paywall deal with the Texas Rangers. There's an MLB team, and they do that. That it's possible that they might approach, you know, they're probably approaching all these teams and saying we could do it a little bit differently. And I think in the long run, you know, you might even find a local channel in some of these markets that might be able to, if it's an independent channel without a lot of programming, just like the Phoenix Suns are doing in Phoenix and stuff like that. But like it is right on the edge. And the thing is, baseball might have a strike next year and then all the contracts lapse. So another part of this is if you're thinking of buying in to save Main Street Sports, you're like, what am I really buying? Some teams for 1 year and then there's a strike and then the contract is up. It's just what, I mean, I admire that MLB has maintained some continuity for fans in these markets. There is a way to watch on TV. There is a way to stream the Padres and the Diamondbacks and other teams like that. But still, this is wild.
It's extremely wild. And most of the people probably don't know what is Main Street. I mean, if you're watching...
It's what, Bally's or FanDuel?
It was Bally's, now it's FanDuel.
Now it's FanDuel, yeah. Speaking of laundering all the names, yeah.
Yeah. So that's probably what you're seeing. There's a couple others. It is not Root Sports. Root Sports still exists
right
in Pacific Northwest. One of the things that I heard is that mystery buyer is Walmart. And before, I'm sure a lot of people did what you did, Jason, yeah, and laughed at that. But remember, Walmart is very involved in sports. And they're also very involved in TV. They bought Vizio a couple of years ago and made it kind of the house brand. And they're the only TV made in America, which probably has to be some advantage right now. So would they buy content just to put it on there?
They have a subscription service, too, with streaming deals.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, is it Paramount that they have a deal with? That's part of, you know, in
yeah,
the
they've
same
got
way
a few, yeah,
Plus.
They've got a few streaming deals and they roll a bunch of stuff up into the Walmart Plus subscription, which is, I mean, we don't talk about, this is kind of outside of downstream, but Walmart Plus is fascinating. There are lots of ads for it, first off. So they're marketing the heck out of it. And the ads are kind of painful, but still the point is, this is Walmart who a colossus in retail in America selling a subscription service. And what does it get you? Well, I mean, it gets you a bunch of different stuff. Think of it as Walmart's version of Amazon Prime. That's basically what it is. It gets you access and discounts and bundling a bunch of stuff like a music service and some video. And they play in this game, too. Right. I think Kobo, they sell Kobo e-readers and you can log into all the Kobo stuff with your Walmart account. Like they have a kind of holistic view of why don't we control. We can control anything we want in the world if we really set our mind to it. So, I mean, I laugh because it's such an out of left field thing, except I totally could believe that they might see some value in rolling that in maybe to their bundle.
Yeah, I actually have it. And one of the things that's about to be tested in Indiana is the Wing drone delivery. They're already doing it in DFW. Oh boy. But now that Indiana is the drone testing environment for the U.S., believe me, they're up there right now. Evidently Walmart is like, hey, we will bring you groceries with a little buzzy thing.
Hooray. little self. I saw a video of those. The one that is the most interesting is it's very efficient because it flies like an airplane until it gets to the destination, and then it hovers like a helicopter and it drops a little thing down. It's pretty wild stuff. Anyway, so by the time you hear this, you may have heard this, but the interesting story is not that this Sinclair spun out thing is going to go bankrupt, because it's already been bankrupt. It's just going to be bankrupt again. The question is, what do the rights holders do? If you're an NBA fan or an NHL fan, is there going to be continuity? Because if they run out of money, like, what happens then? There probably would be continuity and they keep the lights on, but you know, you never know. There were definitely, with Major League Baseball, what happened was, like, one day the Padres were on the cable channel, and the next day the Padres were on MLB TV and a random channel in San Diego, because and the announcers moved over, and like they kept doing it, but like that cable company just ceased to be present in that market. So that may happen.
I think it'll be less a problem for the NBA just because they got buckets of money in this most recent deal.
Sure.
That they could absorb it a little bit and say, hey, just make it to the end of the season. We'll figure it out then.
Sure.
Or NHL doesn't have that kind of scratch.
Yeah. Or they put it on NBA.com. I mean, I think one of the funny things is it's nice to get the money from cable, but if you have it available free in a region, you do get, you can get local ad revenue. You can partner with the cable company to insert ads. There's things you could do, but like, yeah, this is, it's going to be something to watch. So everybody pay attention. You know, I'll be on vacation, but like check, see what happened.
I'm sure you'll be watching sports on your phone/iPad device.
Before we get to TV picks, one more thing that I wanted that you wanted to talk about, so I wanted to get your thoughts about, and we can chat about it, which is this tendency where everybody's like, well, vertical video on phones is fun, let's do that, right? Like TikTok really kicked this off, but YouTube is trying to make vertical video happen. And then the question is, like, Paramount and Disney both have like some vertical video on their platforms. They've got the Verts on ESPN. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess this question is like, are they trying to make something happen that is just outside their realm, or are they right in saying that, you know, phone video, vertical phone video is just as relevant to Paramount as and ESPN as it is to YouTube or TikTok or Instagram?
Exactly. I don't get it, but I'm an old, so
me too.
I probably shouldn't, but I also like Instagram, but Instagram is not something I want to swipe through on my TV. It's just the formatting doesn't work.
I watch a lot of YouTube on my TV, and so do a lot of people. It's the most streaming service of all on television sets is YouTube, but it's different.
I mean,
part of it's a branding. I appreciate that ESPN went hard with their Verts thing and their app on the phone. I'm never looking at that.
That was the thing. It makes sense because they went hard. They created the app. They had what was the dumb mascot, Appy or something horrible.
So it's just an anthropomorphic app mascot.
But it fits there. And if you're doing it in multiple formats, well, you got to figure out some way to put it on the really big one. So I get it. But, you know, is there a way at some point to, you know, say, hey, Claude, stretch this, make some AI, you know, borders. Do you remember all the time when I'm sure you were like me early on the HDTV thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then 90% of the content had borders on the side because it was shot in
4x3.
So much content is letterboxed now. So I don't know why
shot in 4x3 safe mode. And I can see if this isn't already happening, people, you know, designing their 16x9 content to also have a safe area in the center that is their phone safe area, even if it moves a little because you can slide a little, make sure you're in phone safe area. Sure.
I mean, like what did Apple call the new selfie camera that automatically adjusts?
Oh, I forget what that they have a name for everything, but Yeah, it does horizontal and vertical. Yeah, I guess my question is, do you make original content? This is one of the real questions is, are you better off, even if you are Paramount or Disney or anybody else, are you better off doing the Quibi thing, sorry to say it, and create
which is coming back.
Yeah, I mean, Quibi, this is the thing.
Well, Quibi
was
itself, but the format.
Quibi was a bad idea, except maybe it was a good idea too early. That happens sometimes. But do you create originals that are those quick bites, those Quibis, that are going to be something that you can snack on a phone? Does that make sense? Or do people on the phone actually just want a clip that's fun and they'll watch it later or they won't? Like, do you want to create material that runs in both places, or do you want to create ancillary material, or do you just want to clips that are fun and make them available? I mean, I think that's the question is there a, I mean, phones aren't for long form. They're for tall form. Ha. But like, what strategy, if you are going to be Disney Plus, like, do you want a strategy like that on the phone where you're watching vertical video, or are you better off sort of just letting people, you know, share fun clips and on Instagram and stuff like that and not really worry about that experience in your app? It's a really, I mean, I'm sure Julia, were she here, would have a lot of really interesting insights about that, because it's an interesting problem. And I'm not sure, I mean, part of me wants to award or reward these companies for trying a new thing, but part of me wants to say, and I don't think this is just because I'm an old person, but part of me wants to say, you're trying to be something you're not, and your brand promise does not live there. I think ESPN is a good exception, because sharing sports highlights on the internet is a very common thing, and sports are so highlightable in that way that it kind of makes sense. But like, scripted, no. Reality, I mean, maybe a little, but not really. And like, it's a real question whether it's going to look like, you know, how do you do, fellow kids, at the end of the day, right?
Exactly. Like, going back to Peacock, look, I would watch The Traitors. I would not watch it on my phone. I would just not. I have a hard time watching longer, more attention-focusing things on my phone, unless that's the only thing, like when I watch Skyscraper. But I will definitely use it as a second screen. And probably to my attention span's deficit, it's certainly in decline. But it feels like I would not watch Traitors on my phone, but I would watch content about Traitors on my phone.
Yeah.
I would watch secondary things, reactions, you know, Chris and Kish talking about what happened in the scene. She evidently had, in one of the episodes, she had trouble buttering her bread with a knife because it was, she said, it was the wrong knife. You can't butter bread with a indented knife or whatever those little
A serrated knife.
Serrated knife.
Yeah, that would be
but
bad.
The little dimples on the side.
Yeah, yeah.
So she was trying, and they were saying, how is a Top Chef having trouble? But something like that. Give me side content. Don't give me the show.
Yeah, I think so. Keep an eye, as always, vertical video. I'm a bad example here because I don't even like TikTok, because I actually don't like noise coming out of my phone, because I'm using my phone out in the world, and that's not what I want. And when I'm at home, I'm, you know, if I want to watch TV or if I want to watch video, even, I'll have an iPad or a computer or a TV to do it, not a phone. So that does make me an old look. Hi, everybody. I admit it. Let's talk about TV picks before we go, because we do like to talk about TV shows that we like and that we think you maybe should watch. What's your pick, Will?
I'm halfway through this and I'm intrigued by it. I'm very curious how they are going to stick the landing, because it's theoretically a limited series. We know how that can go. But I am watching Wonder Man, which is the latest Marvel TV show. I'm going to mess up his name.
Yahya Abdul-Mateen II. He was in Watchmen.
He was previously in DC. He was great in Watchmen. He was previously Black Manta in the Aquaman movies, which are DC. Mm-hmm. And Ben Kingsley playing the little actor character.
Yeah, from Iron Man 3 and Shang-Chi and some extras, right? The guy who was the Mandarin, except he was just a British actor hired to play the Mandarin.
Exactly. So this is really quirky, really non-Marvel-y.
Yeah.
And there's a ton of wink-nod to the Marvel TV universe while still being a superhero show. And I'm curious how it's going to tie in. Yeah, because they've missed a lot, but Daredevil is great and coming back soon.
Yes.
So I can half recommend Wonder Man, especially if you're involved in the superhero universe.
The reviews I've read are good. I haven't started it yet. It looks funny. It looks like, I mean, it's kind of a Hollywood satire put through a superhero lens, which I really like, that it's not, you know, it's not really as much a superhero show as it is kind of a Hollywood dramedy. Those actors are really great, though. Like, just the buddy comedy aspect of those two actors is...
Exactly. There was the show that HBO did that was all behind the scenes of one of the big... They didn't say Marvel.
Of a right.
But it was terrible.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I didn't watch it.
Two or three episodes, and it was like, oh, this is bad.
The franchise, yeah.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with the baseball documentary Studio. Franchise or the... There's so many others.
Which was also... Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a term.
Okay. Wonder Man. Yeah. Cheers. That's on my list. I'm going to recommend Riot Women, which is on BritBox. It is a BritBox BBC co-pro created by Sally Wainwright, who did Happy Valley, which was a great and dark one of Tim Goodman's favorites. And so great and dark fits. That makes sense. And Last Tango with Halifax as well. It is, the reviews would say it's not as dark and miserable as Happy Valley, and that's true. It does, it features, so think of it kind of like The Commitments. It is about women of a certain age forming a rock band, but they do have lots of problems in their lives, and the show is unflinching about that. And I'll give you a little bit of a content warning. The show begins with one of its characters almost attempting suicide, and then she doesn't, and she ends up in this band. So it is dark in that way, but I think ultimately it's more about finding the lightness and finding your way out of the dark. I feel like this is as light maybe as Sally Wainwright will get, but I really like it. And there's a moment in the first episode where one of the characters keeps getting kind of like pushed into performing, oh, we'll perform Waterloo by ABBA. And she's like, yeah, but that doesn't really say anything. And I wanted to be in a rock band, not a pop band. And she hears another character singing karaoke, and it is loud punk pop. And you can see the look on her face where she says, that music is what I feel. And I thought, oh, this is good. This is a good show. So it's on BritBox if you're in the US, and if you're in the UK, it's been on BBC. So just get it at iPlayer, I guess. But I think it's really good. So Riot Women on BritBox.
Before we close, I do have one Apple-related streaming question for you.
Oh, yeah. Sure. Let's do it. Bonus.
Have you heard anything at all about F1? Any and that, I mean, we know when it's going to happen. We know there's testing now.
Yeah, and we know that they posted a bunch of jobs, but like it seems really late. No, there is not a lot of news about Apple and F1, which is troubling because the F1 season is coming soon. They did, like, they talked about how excited they are that they're doing F1 on their financial call last week, and they talked about how they're bringing MLS as well down to the Apple TV service and not selling extra, although there also was a story about how they cut the budget. And they got rid of a bunch of the Spanish language announcing teams. So, you know, that may be a case where Apple and MLS have just decided they need to reduce the cost of this, maybe as a part of their renegotiated contract even. But the F1 thing, it is surprising. With Apple, you never know how much of it is a black box and how much of it is just coming in late in the game. It may be that they are buying kind of a lot of it prefab, working with F1 and its other partners, and that they don't have to do as much. I would be surprised. They tend to be more ambitious than that, so I would think that there would be something, but it is Apple, so I would not put it past them for them to just sit on this until a week before the F1 season starts and then just do a big reveal or unveil of it all. So we'll see, but I have not heard anything about that yet, and it's something to watch.
I was curious. I was actually looking to see whether or not Apple had a Super Bowl commercial this year, and might that be the place for it, and couldn't find a full list.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing? What's Eddie Q up to? All right, that brings us to the end of this episode of Downstream. If you have a question or suggestion, we didn't get any letters this time, so just next time, downstreamfeedback.com. We love to hear from you, love to hear mothers. If you haven't yet, please consider subscribing to Downstream Plus. This was a full-sized episode for everyone, but the only way to hear the complete version of our next episode and hear ad-free episodes is to subscribe. You can go to downstream.plus to subscribe and support the show. We really appreciate it. You can find me at sixcolors.com, and I appear on many other podcasts here at Relay and over at theincomparable.com. And you can find Will at undertheknife.substack.com. And that's it. Until next time, Will, thanks for being here.
Have a great vacation, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Bye, everybody.